started.
From her crumbling bunker, a post-apocalyptic librarian explores the wasteland, recovers books, and keeps the flame of knowledge alive.
An eccentric traveler with tales slightly more than believable wanders the wilds in search of fine beers, good company, and strange artifacts.
A wheeling-dealing maverick, not averse to a new scheme or hustle, keeps an eye out for the next wealthy dupe or pursuing lawman.
They find themselves together, traveling the long roads of Texas, meeting steampunk luminaries, and stumbling across outrageous fortune.
Tonight, they report back to you, through strange telegraph technology, on the latest happenings, interesting trivia of our steampunk world in the great state of Texas.
Join us now for the Texas Steampunk Connection.
That intro is never going to not make me happy.
Exactly. He was sitting there smiling like an idiot the whole way through.
Thanks.
The best.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. It's Tuesday night. It is, the last day of April. And you're with the Texas Steampunk Connection again.
Yay!
Wow! How's everybody doing tonight?
Oh, man. I had a serious case of ADHD all day. I could not concentrate on anything. I was like trying to chase a train.
That sounds like my everyday.
I wonder you're exhausted.
Yeah, except when I'm, manic and moving from project to project.
Yeah, oh, between allergies and storms continuing to roll in and the pressure changes, it's messing with everybody.
It's so bad. Yeah, my headache finally broke this weekend when the rain did. Yeah, I woke up Sunday morning, I was again. Like, I don't have a headache. Like 2 hours later, I'm like, guess what? My head hurts.
Oh. Yeah. Oh, let's see here. I actually met someone this week that does a lot of the data for the LCRA, the HydroNet for Texas. What that essentially is the government version of the weather stations throughout the United States. And they have a website called hydromet.lcra.org.
Okay.
And it's probably the fastest way to keep up with storms. It's where pretty much a lot of these other companies and programs pull their data from, because they're all a bunch of government assisted or weather stations. So, but yeah, no, it's showing that we're going to get storms in like the next couple hours. It's going to be fun.
Wait,
like
down there or all over?
Looks like Dallas is going to get hit too. It's like,
it's a little cloudy,
Dallas.
Okay.
I'll post a link in the description just because it's cool.
I mean, it's spring in, Texas, so.
Yeah.
But it should be hot by now.
Don't.
I remember the last weekend of Sherwood Forest Fair being like really unpleasantly warm. Yeah. And this year it was gorgeous.
It was. I haven't been out there, but that weekend was fantastic.
But that's scary too about what's gonna happen this summer.
It was 88 degrees and humid yesterday. So I mean,
yeah,
it's muggy as hell. And
well, yeah,
it's coming.
I know. But what does it mean for summer? Is summer gonna go further?
I mean, we've had 3 years of drought and super hot, and all of the heat domes, which I didn't even know that was a thing until the last few years when it's just everywhere. The heat dome, the heat dome.
We're in a dome of heat.
I'm sure that happened before. We just didn't call them that.
Didn't call it that, or wasn't happening that often. I mean, there were super hot summers when I was a kid. It's not like everything suddenly changed, but it's just, this is 3 years of, we've successfully lost rose bushes every year. We have two that are dead. We have one left that is like, thriving right now.
But you're seeing the desolation and not the accumulation of certain plants that can't handle it anymore. Versus like I've planted a bunch of trees. I'm replacing trees.
Yeah.
And that's a weird thing to do.
Well, and these are Lowe's rose bushes. Those things are hardy as hell, man. But we could not give them enough water to keep them going without, overloading our water bill.
I just want our readers and listeners to know that we are not paid by Lowe's to say these things. We gotta start saying things like that.
Do we? Do we have to say that?
I mean,
we are, ad-free and editorially independent. Thank you, Patreon subscribers.
Thank you.
Lowe's rose bushes really suck.
Oh Oh no.
Shout out to Lawrence and Rita, who are in the audience tonight. As usual, thank you for guys for tuning in. Let me ask, what are you drinking?
I'm boring tonight, Lambrusco. So I went back to an old favorite.
Lambrusco, like the Lambrusco?
Yes, the actual, the Riuniti screw top. Great big.
The classic.
Great big jug. Yeah, nice and cold. Yep.
I got some of that downstairs.
What you got?
I picked up a, you're not going to like this, Thax. It's an IPA.
Wow.
So,
okay.
It's called Wicked Haze Double Hazy with cryogenically enhanced hops, which I'm not totally sure why that would matter.
Genetically engineered.
No, cryogenically enhanced, which means I guess they froze it extra hard or something. But it is called, it is Shiner's Hex.
Shiner?
Oh.
Yeah. Double hazy India pale ale brewed with cactus water. And it's,
that's a lot of words.
5% alcohol.
Good Lord.
That's the thing about IPAs that are obviously from the Austin area and whatnot. The more words you can get in, the more lumberjacks like them.
I've had that.
Because they got to be lumberjacks, because what else are they wearing plaid for with beards?
I did see, though, I didn't get any yet, but the like the Simply like lemonade and the Simply orange juice, they're doing Simply spiked now.
Yep.
So yeah, they've got spiked versions of their juice. I know, I want to get the lemonade.
That sounds good.
My wife Erica is up in Colorado in the grocery store. She found spiked Mountain Dew.
Well, I mean, wasn't it used to be moonshine?
No, they yes. It's complicated.
No.
However,
yes, but no, but yes.
That it is now sold as an alcoholic beverage again, like almost 100 years later or something stupid. I don't quote me on any of that, but yeah, it's a complicated history of alcohol and Mountain Dew. They've been trying to get it back into Mountain Dew a long time. And apparently they want to leave the industrial lubricant in it for the color, but only for America. In Britain, it's not yellow and it doesn't have that in there.
Well, you can also get like this, like the, you know, like they make the Dr. Pepper with the cane syrup and all that. It's like the, mm-hmm. Yeah. They do that with Mountain Dew too. It's really good. I think it's clear too.
It is, because what the color is, I call it an industrial lubricant because it technically is, but it's also just cooking oil to a degree to help suspend.
But it's more fun to say industrial lubricant.
It's considered, it's
better than personal lubricant. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it depends on the size of your party.
I mean, you could use it as a personal lubricant, I guess, but that's not a high nor here. But
break out the tub of industrial.
Oh my!
How's your beer?
Well, what are you drinking, Thax? Before we get back into industrial lubricants,
I want to know
how was your beer, Jack?
Know what your beer's like?
Oh, it's really good. I'm going to say, as for the hazies I've drank, it's not. It's really difficult to beat the electric jellyfish, but I'll say this one's about 80% there.
Wow.
So,
considering what you pay for the electric jellyfish, I think that's a pretty good deal.
I mean, that's when I get six of these for the cost of like one and a half electric jellyfish. So,
get drunk so much faster.
And this it's 9.5. No, wait.
Wow. Wait something.
Nine,
really?
Nine plus. Yeah, it's 12 fluid ounces and 9.5% of that's alcohol by volume.
Wow. Okay.
It's made with cactus water. I'm not totally sure what that is. But
so that's like Imperial.
I drank one of these over the weekend after mowing the lawn. I'm like, and I kind of didn't really pay attention. I kind of guzzled it a little bit than normal because
drunken
I was
lawn mow. Wait, after you mowed the lawn
after
or before?
I mowed the lawn. I sat here in my chair and the room started spinning about 20 minutes later. I'm like, whoa,
damn,
what's going on?
See, you should have had it before you mowed the lawn.
I had 3% of the alcohol of the 9%, like within the first swig. So, I mean, yeah, I had as much as a normal Bud Light with lime in the first couple of sips.
You drink a lot of Bud Light with lime?
That's the only light beer I really enjoy. Okay. And we've had this conversation. That's the one I'm going to die on my molehill about. That one's actually good. I don't care about whatever advertising Bud Light screws up on. I like that one with lime in it. God damn it.
No, but your voice gets kind of high.
Lime in the top, which I also do. But if you just buy me a regular Bud Lime, I'm going to squeeze a lime in it. It's not going to be as good.
I don't care about the Bud Light. It's the soapbox that comes with it when I bring it up.
Exactly. You got to have a soapbox.
That high pitched.
Have a soapbox booster.
I'm drinking it.
Looking forward to your soapboxes. We need to start poking around her library and finding the one book she doesn't want us to find.
Actually, that's what I keep getting in trouble for when I'm writing episodes, is Bussell keeps calling me Ranty Beth. She's like, you need to dial back on the Ranty Beth.
The Ranty Beth. See, this is not the place. We need that over here. Let's get Ranty Beth here. What sets you off? Tell us. We need to talk to this person. Give us a phone number. Not over, Jack, not over here. We don't want to. Get everyone else.
You were very defensive over here tonight.
I know he's a little.
This is me all day. This has been me all day. I've had to rein this in from work. I'm sorry.
All right, Brando, just dial it back a notch or two. We're doing okay.
Let me undo some of my popped collars.
The triple popped collar was the coolest guy. Rolled up sleeves on your blazer.
The beer's good, by the way. I recommend it if you're into IPAs. It's pretty decent. It's strong. It's a good. It's got the Steiner quality that they bring.
Check the Bud Light guy. Bud Light Lime guy recommends the Steiner. That's what.
Ooh, is that what I'm renamed now? The Bud Light guy. No, it's the Bud Light with lime guy. Lime. Get it right. That's what I said.
With lime.
See, if we were fancy, I could push and just move Jack out of the way, and then it would be Thax's turn.
I mean, we could. Can we like?
Oh boy! He's
got those of you who are not watching the show, I just moved Blue Stocking to the opposite side of the screen.
Opposite. Thax, please enlighten us.
I'm still going through that clown shoe selection tonight. It's
still wearing clown your clown shoes.
American mango, American Kolsch.
Kolsch.
What is
the Kolsch? Is a style of beer.
Oh, I mean, okay.
Little man.
He's like chowing on that apple.
Peruvian.
I think it's a mango.
Chomping on a mango there.
Don't you have to peel mangoes?
Yeah, you should.
You peel them with your
teeth.
Did
you see his hat? I'm not going to argue with him.
No, he's got a very official looking hat.
So you should move aside and let the mango through?
Kids don't know that song.
Oh, no. Do they not?
No. This up, Ulysses? It's a Kolsch beer. Which is
what cool.
Kolsch is, it's a German beer. It's it has its own unique flavor, but it's about the same strength of flavor as a lager or a pilsner. It's just a different style a little bit. And I'm not getting the mango really, but
thank you, Jack.
You're welcome.
Appreciate your beer knowledge.
I thank you, Wikipedia.
Hey, man.
Kolsch, a German pronunciation of those letters, is a style of beer originating in Cologne or Cologne.
Cologne.
It's Cologne, but it's colon, yeah. It's got two of them above the O.
It's colon? Never
it's
mind.
Colon
no,
the
it's
o.
not.
It's colon. It's colon beer? What?
In Germany. It has an original gravity between 11 and 14 degrees Plato, which is very important to those who play with Plato.
I don't know. There's numbers there, and I don't know what any of that
means. My friend who's a beer maker understands all of that. Plato is a thing. But yeah, apparently it does not tell you the flavor.
Dante's asking, is it in a green? It's a green bottle, right? What green bottle? What, the beer or the cologne?
Cologne's a place, not a bottle, honey. I'm sorry.
The
Kolsch.
Kolsch.
Yeah, it came in a green thing.
This came in a can, so.
I drink my booze with a screw top out of a paper bag, so I'm not that versed when it comes to beer. Sorry.
We're back to 40s?
She's got a straw. She's still fancy.
I do have my straws.
We need to get some swizzle straws, swizzle stick, like curly Q straws. We sit here, we can just drink our stuff on set like this. Just everyone can watch the alcohol roll into our brain,
and then they're gonna know what we're spending our Patreon funds on.
We need more Patreon supporters so we can buy some swizzle stick straws things. Give us some crazy straws. Gotta find the craziest of straws. It's gonna make that wine even better, let me tell you.
Okay.
So I want to say to Ulysses and Dante, thanks for tuning in. We're not usually like this. He lied and hoped they believed him. Let's get on with our show.
Normal.
Tonight we're continuing our series on steampunk subclasses, subcultures. right? I don't know how else to say. But tonight
subcultures we're talking, of a subculture.
Yeah. We're talking about dust punk or American style steampunk. How is it different than the English steampunk concept? How are we expressing it different? How cool is it? It's so cool.
Yes.
And there is
a really easy fix for this. What? Easy way to explain this.
Okay. From Wikipedia?
No, this is from my own brain, which is even more scary. So you have your normal steampunk, which is very British, Victorian, London feel. And then you have
Hail to the Queen and all that.
Yeah, Hail to the Queen, British tea.
Top hats.
And then you have Back to the Future 3. And you're good. We don't even have to talk about that other movie.
I like that other movie.
Wild Wild West? I like it, and that is the hill I will die on.
There you go.
I love that movie.
I mean, whenever we're trying to explain steampunk very quickly, for a long time it's been, do you remember Wild Wild West?
Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, it's kind of that.
And that is a dust punk freaking film if there ever was one.
Straight up.
There is.
That's supposed to be the monster, the spider's supposed to be from actually a Superman. Hilarious.
I heard that.
Let's not get started on the robotic spiders after the way Drew was freaking out about the spider in the teacup race at Galveston. The spider! No, there is a series, a book series that is excellent American Weird West steampunk. It's the Clockwork Century series by Sherry Priest, and it takes place exclusively in America. And we've talked about this before. Every book is named after the big crazy invention that's in like the Dreadnought was the big Bone Shaker was
series.
I do. And she yes, Clockwork Century. It is amazing. And she all of the inventions that she uses, all of the big devices that each book is named after, have patents that she found at a patent office from the 19th century and used them. Yes.
So it was definitely some evil genius from that time frame going, I'm going to make
or
this.
Or just some backers. Inventing weirdo who came up with all sorts of crazy stuff. I mean, like the submersible that we've talked about before. Yep. They tried to use submersibles in the Civil War.
And I think that's
not a lot of men came back from that.
That's one of the things that's cool about American style steampunk. We have all these features that are homegrown that, or at least feel to me to be very homegrown, the idea of innovation and the patent office. And, you know, America was where you went for the latest scientific research.
And for somebody to give you money to build it.
Because you had all of technology, everything was
and
allowed.
We had the guys to give that money because we had the railroad barons. We had
the oil barons, everybody
with money
who was
were willing to spend it on whoever could catch their whimsy.
Yeah, rich men who were strip mining every single resource in this country. And had a lot of money.
From Django, it was perfect. It's like you had my curiosity, but now you have my attention. And if you could get anyone with rich that was rich to pay money to fund your machinations, it happened.
Well, things were. I mean, because they needed to validate they had all of this money, but not social position. They were nouveau riche. They felt their need to put their names everywhere, like Carnegie with the libraries, which, I mean, that's another situation. He built the libraries. He didn't buy the books. So, but they had money, but they felt the need to be validated. They wanted to be part of society because they weren't accepted. They weren't old money. And so they were marrying their daughters off to poor British nobles. I mean, there was
there was
a book.
English. They weren't the aristocracy of England.
They didn't have a pedigree. They didn't have a pedigree. And there is literally a book with British bachelors in it and their titles.
Whoa.
Yes. And I can't remember the name of it. I always forget the name of that book, but it came out every few years. And so they would find husbands for their very rich daughters, and it was a wild time. I mean, the industrial era was going bananas, so it's a perfect ground for steampunk,
and that's where I hang out at. That's my character's kind of position is being involved in that moment in time where I can trick as many rich people as possible to invest in my inherently risky schemes.
Yes.
Incorporated, by the way. That's actually the name of the company. And It is a fantastic time, and I've role played with this a lot, and I've always enjoyed every role play I've been involved with that.
Yes, thank you, John Naylor. Burke's Peerage. Yes. Burke's Peerage was very popular. Yeah, so
it's a dating hot book.
Basically, like I said, it's poor, eligible British nobles. They need money to refurbish their crumbling estates. Because that was the backstory of like Downton Abbey, was that she was American. She got sent off to England with all of her, you know, family's money to refurbish the estates. And, you know, her family had you know, nobility in the family line. So, yeah. I mean,
kind of turned into that, like, Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous TV shows. Kind of like all these people who have all this money and now are bachelors come live in their house.
I mean, there are some wild homes. Well, Lee Kempner home. Perfect example of what was going on.
Of the mansions I've seen, that one's fairly tame.
It is very low key. I was shocked.
I'm like, if I was going to own a mansion, it would be like that one.
You're winding up. What's
I'm going to hold my opinion until we see it finished and everything's, you know, clean and presentable. I mean, you know, it's under construction.
Yes.
Oh, the mansion itself. I thought you meant before you say something really off kilter. Yeah,
No.
I thought you were going to say something nasty.
Who knows? I don't know.
Come on, you could own it.
But secondly, I mean, it had closets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All the bedrooms had closets.
And that was nowhere back then.
No.
That is so modern.
But do you know why? I found out why. It had to do with square footage of the house and your property taxes, and those could be considered, in some places, they were considered extra, they were considered rooms, so you just did not have closets. Yeah.
So I guess it wasn't it was another display of wealth.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because I don't give a damn. I could put closets in here.
Yep, I can afford.
And an elevator.
Oh, that elevator was.
And indoor plumbing.
I can't wait to see what the elevator looks like once they finally get it all cleaned up and
can't wait
shiny
to see indoor plumbing again.
They have a toilet. It's in the basement behind some plywood.
That was built on plywood.
Hey, you know what? Needs must.
Oh, for sure. I'm happier with that than with none.
But, you know, if they can do it, I feel like Steampunk November should be able to put in some decent ones, but that's another story.
Steampunk November just got their own porta-johns. Like, they own them now.
I'm just saying, layers and layers of skirts.
Oh.
Those bathrooms. Well. Yeah.
No, I'm very happy with that, with the actual bathrooms over by the campgrounds, because they're an actual facility.
And
you actually have room in there to, like, deal with your stuff. So,
depending on how many layers of bustles and skirts you're wearing.
I mean, I think they need more hooks on the wall for people.
Yeah, that would be
a good addition, because you need, like, I'm trying to hang my gun belt and my backpack and my kid and my whatever.
Your kid?
My father put me on a hook once. Once.
Oh, poor little Artful Dodger. Don't hang him on the hook. Although that's a great idea for pictures.
It would be. It would be, wouldn't it? Just
does the three of us and the kid on the hook behind us. Okay, so yes, Dust Punk.
The whole cowboys and holsters and all that good stuff.
Well, Firefly.
That's American born.
Yeah. Yeah, Firefly had a very, the space cowboy thing. Yeah, it's just a great breeding ground for it, especially because this country has every single climate possible, every single natural disaster you could possibly want. I mean, depending on where you put someone, anything can happen. And
you're really close to all of it.
Yeah, you know, no matter where you are. Yeah.
Not just the contiguous, but you get the islands and you get Alaska and.
It's such a plethora of villains.
But then you got some crazy stuff like Yellowstone that can happen too. Like, you know.
And it wouldn't take much. Yeah.
No.
For that cold air to go? Nope. So, living in America is kind of choosing which natural disaster you're okay with, you know, living over your shoulder. But no, this is such a rich ground to create steampunk and a lot of different cultures that can create their own steampunk out of it. But the blending of, you know, ideas and beliefs and, you know, changing mores as far as colonialism and slavery, and Justine Ireland, Dread Nation, Civil War Zombies, you know, with
Civil War Zombies,
young black women that were trained and hired to fight the zombies for the wealthy white people that employed them.
Yeah.
And they were badasses. I mean, so there's a lot of room.
Now, I play a game that doesn't, it's kind of steampunk.
I was going to say Oregon Trail, but never mind.
Oh, that one. No, Oregon Trail Zombies is hilarious, by the way, and you should play it on Steam. It's cheap. It's the only time when you can die by dissing Terry, like the man Terry. Hunt Showdown is an interesting game. It's played out in the Louisiana Bayou, and it's okay. A kind of like a dimensional rift is opened up, and these demons from a, not really a hell, but there's something coming through and you're trying to stop it. There's this
like an eldritch horror.
It's an eldritch horror of some type. And they're kind of the bosses you have to banish. It's an extraction game. So you got to go in, take out the bosses, fight the other hunters who are players to get out, who are also trying to steal the bounty. And, but the guns are all based around like 1893 and like a couple years ahead. So you still get stuff like the trench pistol from the German side. You get some of the weird stuff that are all of the stuff that's trying to make single shot rifles become semi-automatic. So there's a lot of weird gadgetry around it that it does exist. But it's very interesting. And I like the horror aspect, and you get the Louisiana Bayou in rainstorms.
I mean, fire. I've seen the Louisiana Bio. It's actually a good place for an eldritch horror to rise up.
Really good, and of course they don't know. They don't call them zombies. It's not zombies. They're grunt. They're just. They don't have the word for that yet. So they don't actually call them that in the lore.
Sherry Priest, Clockwork Century. She doesn't call them zombies either. They're she call them walkers. I can't remember. It's been a while since
they call them. Yeah. They have different names depending on the type of one you have. Like you have some of these that are like burning infernally, and they're I can't remember their name, but they have like grunts and. There's these women who that were pregnant during the time this was happening, and this like, weird beehive thing sprouts out of them.
No. I have.
It gets really creepy, really fast.
I have issues with certain body horror, so let's just.
And so there's a little bit of body horror in it. It's not horrible. That's probably one of the worst ones, actually. And but the,
so you went straight to the worst one with this. Thanks.
I know, thank you for the maternal nightmare.
but like as they release these events that you can play through, they have a lot of like just the lore that they're like sliding under the table that no one reads except me because I freaking love that stuff. And that's the whole thing about steampunk. You just want to know more about whatever you're involved in.
Yeah.
And it's a crazy place that I would have thought of putting. Let's build an extraction game in the 1800s in the middle of the Louisiana Bayou with zombies. I'm like, what? No, what the hell? This is not what, like obviously only a couple of years later or 20 years later, you have World War I. And that seems to be where games were going was like, we're going to go get Call of Duty, which is like pulling it back to like World War I. And then they're just like, no, we're going to go back even further. I guess almost a steampunk game, but the makers don't call it a steampunk game. I guess it's that horror. I can't come up with the name of it. It's realistic, but it's still a horror, historical horror. I don't know.
Historical?
I consider it dust punk. It fits right in. You just got to throw goggles on people.
Well, also, I think at some point there's a where everything is kind of thrown together to a point that you just that's where you end up with new names for things because there's just nothing that fits.
I was thinking that I was trying to bring up the other. Label that we use, but basically you take your dust punk and your weird tales or cosmic horror that we talked about in the previous show and sort of schlep them together, and that's what I've always called Weird West.
Yes, it's
Western with freaky monsters in the dark.
It's like Cowboys and Aliens is a
that's
weird
what, West. That's what I was about to say,
Not a good movie, but yes.
Hey, I love that movie. My Apple Watch, I named it Arm Cannon after the... And my phone, whenever my watch charges, my phone will say, Arm Cannon is charged. It's very fun, and I love it.
Briscoe County Jr. would be...
That was so good. Yeah. Yes.
If you'll like... What's his name?
Bruce Campbell.
Bruce Campbell. This was an early Bruce Campbell.
Baby Bruce Campbell.
During his... time with doing like between Xena the Warrior Princess.
It was
Princess
before Xena.
And it was before Hercules because, and Xena.
Yes, because it was the early Briscoe County Jr. was the early 90s. I was still in high school when it came out.
And I wish I was watching it when
Xena
it came
and
out.
Hercules was mid to late 90s. That's
when I was watching.
I think Hercules was Xena was later.
And Xena, well they yeah, yeah, but they overlaid heavily.
Yeah, but I think Briscoe County Jr. Let me, because that one, like I said, because he had such a baby face in that.
Yeah, but that is a funny one because it feels like it has
90. Oh, I was wrong. Okay, 93. So yeah,
okay.
It does overlay the Hercules and Xena. Yeah,
I think
barely.
Not, based only on my memory, I think he was doing Briscoe County Jr. while Hercules and Xena were happening, and then when that show ended or stopped being a draw in his time, he moved over to the other show.
Started doing his King of Thieves impersonation.
He wasn't actually in that many, because I went back and rewatched Xena again, and he's actually not in that. He just made such an impression with everybody.
He wasn't the main character.
Yeah, yeah, he was like in and out, but he made such an impression. Everybody remembered him. Yeah. God, that was, Briscoe County Jr. was so good. There's a lot of weird shows back then. Well, I mean, like Twin Peaks and the X-Files kind of got all the weird shit on TV started.
And there was not very much sci-fi either at that time. So it was just one of those moments.
It was in and out.
Yeah, it was like you had...
But not genre combining like that, like the X-Files did or like Twin Peaks did. And then you
had Space Above and Beyond, and you had like some of the later Star Treks in the Prime Universe, like Voyager Deep Space Nine.
Especially Deep Space Nine, yeah.
No one ever thinks of Babylon 5. That's such a wonderful TV show.
I never watched that one.
You gotta watch.
These kids don't even know that show.
I know. Babylon 5 is fun.
It's like, I think it's a cult classic.
It is. So you know, the actors have a whole lot of weirdness with themselves at first. They don't really feel comfortable with their roles.
Mm-hmm.
But later, it's the charm because of that. It feels so different because the characters. It's like, how would you feel if you thrown in this position? Well, first you'd be like, right, I got to do this, and that's how the actors feel too, and it's kind of funny.
So you remember in previous episodes I talked about my coworker who's never seen any movies that I reference?
Yeah.
Yes.
He's watching the show now.
Hell yeah.
Welcome.
Under the name Calmly Shouting. I wanted to read this idea. He says, Dust Punk Horror, where the characters are being hunted by Chupacabra.
I would watch that. You know what?
I don't know.
Yeah, is that a dog? Why so small?
It's because it's called a Pomeranian. They took a dog that used to chase bears and they shrunk it down to be lap sized to keep the bears away in
so
Russia.
They put those in together.
They come from Pomerania, Germany.
The dog was the Chupacabra.
Or I'm holding a Chupacabra. Honestly, what was that TV show that's on Netflix that has a guy who turns into a were-Chupacabra?
What?
Yeah, you don't know. Oh, gosh. What is that show? No.
Okay, here's my confusion in that the Chupacabra is already a cryptid that isn't, and why is he a were-Chupacabra? You would just turn into the...
He only turns into one every now and then. It's when he gets like really pissed off. It's kind of one of those like offset X-Men movies where the characters have powers and they got them in really weird ways. And because of this one guy who's doing gene splicing, and he's kind of an asshole. He really is an asshole. Like the moment you think he's about to redeem himself and like apologize for anything, he just immediately kills it. And you're just like,
okay, what is this show called?
I'm trying to find it right now. Okay. Netflix, The Imperfects. The Imperfects on Netflix.
Oh,
I started watching the first episode of that.
That sounds vaguely familiar. No,
it's great. It's funny. I wish it kept going because I really think by the end of the show, the characters just got perfect and the show got canceled.
It's an import, right? It's not an American TV show.
I think it's an American TV. I don't know.
Actually, I want to see in Weird West Steampunk? Something with the Donner Party.
What?
I mean, The Donner Party? Weird West Steampunk? Come on.
A steampunk Donner Party.
I'm just saying.
That sounds like
a rich ground like, right there.
Murder mystery evenings that we need to put on. Donner Party, party of five. Party of four.
Oh, no. I just feel like there's room for a story there. It won't be me writing it, but weirdly enough, I can't write steampunk. I've tried, and it's
What do you mean?
I've tried to write steampunk stories before, and I don't do well with it. I don't know.
What's your hang up? But why do you don't think it's steampunk? Like, give me what is your hate? Why do you hate your writing?
Wow. You took that from zero to I have a low self-esteem in my writing.
I only have a certain amount of time. I got to like, what's your primary top piece of why you hate yourself?
Excellent fiction writer, but I do well better writing urban fantasy than I do steampunk. I don't, I think it's because I like steampunk, but I don't have a, I'm not good with like coming up with the sciencey stuff.
See, the thing is you're thinking too much like a scientist. You got to like think more alchemy. You don't
The problem is that I don't have a scientific brain. I'm not thinking like a scientist.
Well, don't then. It's fine. You don't have to explain.
I'm a librarian. I'm not a scientist.
Damn it, Jim. I'm a librarian, not a doctor.
I don't think you have to
be. I'm a doctor, but not that kind of doctor.
You don't need to make your weird gadgets and scientific topics your up and center plot points. Those are just happening in the background.
Yeah. Have you read 75% of steampunk? No, I'm just kidding.
Just do like the mummy.
I know. I think it's the mummy dead in some cases.
That's what I'm saying. It's which I think that's, I've read too much. I think my brain may be oversaturated with steampunk literature to the point that I don't know. Maybe everything I'm writing is derivative. I'm not really sure. I don't know. I will send you the one thing that I wrote.
Okay.
That I wanted to. It's not.
And I'll give you an honest report on it.
It may be one page.
I'll turn it into a script and we'll make a radio show.
And weirdly enough, I was doing it in 2007 or 2008, and it was about a post-apocalyptic wasteland, and I was collecting books. Wonder where the Dollhouse podcast came from.
Well, and how like half of our opening sequences, geez, it's kind of turned into this. Now you got
two Fall Guys
to go with you to get in trouble with you. It's great.
Oh, that is a, we should try to write a radio.
We really should.
Okay, when I finish my dissertation and I have brain space free.
Okay.
We should try to open up a Google Doc.
We'll
open a
document. We'll have all three of us, and the Patreon supporters can read it as we go.
Yes, and y'all can send in ideas and suggestions.
And yeah, I'm willing to die multiple times in the show. Just bring me back like Duncan Idaho. It's fine.
See, Jack can protect me and Thax.
You killed Jack. You bastard!
Oh no!
I come rolling in. Jack, are you okay? It's like,
okay, but only if we can have a stagecoach. Just like in our intro.
Yep. Just come in another stagecoach. Hey, how you doing? I'm Jack 15.
Jack's our outrider. It'll be awesome.
Well, let's talk about some problems I see with writing or making stories in the Weird West or in Dust Punk, because America is full of problems. And certainly were during the Gilded Age.
Throw money at it and get straight.
You can see a lot of the problems if you read the old adventure stories, like Tin Man of the Prairie. I mean, it's a matter of who you're writing for, what you're trying to accomplish, and how much research are you going to do?
Well, you got to put the Pinkertons in there because they exist, and they're now taking people with Pokemon cards.
I was going to say, they're still around, and they're still causing...
and they tried to shut down Red Dead Redemption 2, the game, because the Pinkertons have such a bad rep in the game, and they're just like, we're taking this from history,
bad
man.
Rep everywhere.
How people see you right now.
Yeah. I have been to Jim Thorpe, Pennsylvania, where a whole bunch of where the Molly Maguires were, and people were getting arrested, and the one guy that the Pinkertons were in there as strike breakers, because there's a prison there, and there's a whole story about an innocent man was going to, one of the miners, he kept saying he was innocent. He was executed. But before they took him out of the cell, he put his hand on the cell. And he's like, this will stay here until, you know, I've been, you know, proven innocent or whatever. So there is like a handprint in the cell, but they say it always comes back. Like they tried to paint over it, but then they won't let you take pictures of it with flash photography because it could damage something, which I don't understand. If it keeps coming back. How would flash photography? But yeah, it's
a very silly story.
Pinkertons, they're not well liked in the Northeast in the coal cracker country because a lot of miners died.
What
because
kind of cracker country? What?
Coal cracker. They're coal crackers.
Oh, okay. Go on.
I spent 8 years in Hazleton, Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. So.
The Hershey place. Yeah. Okay. Go on.
Yes. We had the Hershey talk. Yes. 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 So yeah, right, no. The Pinkertons
about Pennsylvania.
They killed a lot. They caused a lot of problems with the miner strikes.
That makes
for
sense.
You know, men that were, you know, tunneling through solid rock with a pickaxe in the hope of making living wage. I mean, you know.
I was thinking more about how.
Sorry. See, that's ranty, Beth.
I love Ranty Beth.
That's not the direction
I expected us to go.
This could become a music thing. We have Ranty Beth and the riffs, you know, or something like this.
We've got.
All right, Zach, please continue. I'm sorry.
I mean, I was kind of thought we were going toward, you know, the blatant racism of America.
Well, I mean, the Pinkertons kind of dabbled in all of that, but colonialism,
the world they're in.
Yeah, the train tracks just kind of laid their way all the way across and crushed anyone in their, you know, their path. And so that's why writing steampunk in America, it can be, what's the word I'm looking for? You gotta be careful. Yeah. Difficult, yeah. You know, depending on, like I said,
to be respectful of cultures that we were not respectful to. Who are we talking about? We're talking about the African American diaspora. Yeah. But also the Irish.
The Nobody Chinese that Irish. Built the railroad.
The Chinese, Native Americans who we just committed genocide on. I mean, we've talked about this before, but I don't want to gloss over it when this is the time to talk about it. There was a powwow here in town just a week or two ago, and I've always wanted to go to one.
Yeah.
Because I just think it would be very interesting to learn more about the Native Americans today. But I also don't want to be like
the white guy at the show.
Looky-loo guy. Yeah.
One of the things that I have heard, especially when it comes to Native Americans and especially like in steampunk, because it does exist, it's out there. But one of the biggest issues, especially with writing like Native American character or indigenous characters, is they are still here. Yeah. They still exist. You can't write about them. They're like they're some past culture that's no longer around. You have to write about them as the living, breathing group of people that they still are. They still exist. They're, you know, their cultural beliefs may have changed and evolved somewhat, you know,
but they're a real
as times change, but they are very real and their beliefs are real. You cannot just bring in the magical Native American man to come in and fix your problem.
Shaman Blue Stocking. Come.
You know what I'm getting at. I will reach through here.
They're called medicine men. I've never heard a Native American refer to themselves as shaman.
I think that we have a lot of mistaken beliefs about what people.
You're right.
What indigenous people call their leaders.
Obviously, right here, we just made it, you know, some wonderful faux pas, I'm sure.
Yes, see, Rita said there were several people at Asylum in Native American steampunk costumes. Yeah. So it does, but it's recognizing that these are cultures that are living and breathing and existing and living their lives just like anybody else. They're not magical and mystical, and you know, they can't come in and say, you know, just like the so many shows and movies that have the magical black woman, the strong black woman that comes in and saves all the white people who can't save themselves, which it's is totally the idea that Justine Ireland was playing on with the Dread Nation, that these young black girls are literally being trained to save white people. I mean,
And especially with like dust punk, it was such the cowboys and Indians. It's a big part
of
that. I know the Indian word is not right anymore, but that's.
But I know what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was the genre. Fact that,
like, Texas has so many wonderful tribes, and that, especially if you're talking about like Texas history and you're trying, I have a friend who does a small podcast that does Texas history that I talk to fairly often. And she was talking about like all the different ones. And I've done, heck, even in my West Texas world, I used to play a Native American in one of the plays talking about how it was the deal of how they gave the land up and basically moved away. And it was the Comanche out there, and just very the tribe that it is. And wouldn't it be cool if there was a resurgence of that kind of honor back into Texas? Would be a wonderful feeling to have that kind of be brought up as more of the heritage of the, not just the people, but the land and the people who live there.
Yeah. Well, and there's also the issue of Native Americans are not a monolith. And so you can't, if you're going to write about it, you have to be real clear about the land that you're writing about, who was there at the time that you're writing about. You can't just throw a whole bunch of stuff into the pot and be like, it's Native American.
And it's one of those things of my mom's property. I wander around. I stub my toe on arrowheads all the time. Okay. And so it's just one of those things of it's here.
Yeah.
I'm seeing it still, and it's wonderful. But
do your research.
Yeah, it's just one of those things about the research. And of course, they've been here for so long, it's hard to tell what time frame. And you have to like get a historian involved with all the pieces. I've donated pieces.
You talk to people who know. You talk to the historians, the Native American historians. You know, there's a lot of them in academia now, and they're writing their papers and telling their stories and their truths. Good. And it's,
it needs to happen. We need to bring all that back more.
What's up, Fax? You're processing again.
He's just a joy.
Soaking it in.
I can't always tell if that's your absorbing face or your "I wish these assholes would shut up and let me talk for once" face. Well,
I appreciate you asking, because sometimes it is that.
I yield the floor.
I'm used to it. I have lived with it all my life.
No. I'm in my mind, I'm trying to eke out how to make characters in situations that are weird west. You pointed out like the magical Native American trope. I love that trope. And I know that
doesn't have to have any explanation.
That makes me a laughable character. I know that. But I'm also thinking, you know, compared to the dippy white immigrants who came over to this country and their bathing habits, and their lack of empathy for all other human beings. Mm-hmm. I mean, those are tropes too. But the Native Americans really showed us up, us being white people.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, they're at a very established, evolved culture, which is part of why I wish I knew more about Native American cultures.
Yeah.
World.
Yeah.
But, you know.
It would be cool to see a steampunk Native American culture bash.
I'm afraid I love the accoutrement, the Native American beating and all the ornaments that they make in different cultures, but I'm afraid to incorporate any of them.
That is another thing I'm with you on. I actually there for a time had a bunch of Oriental gear or like attachments to my gear that I wore, and a bunch of people were like, "Are you afraid of offending anyone?" I'm like, I've run into very few Asians that were, or people of, you know, from Asia or Asian descent that really cared too much, but they gave me props on it. But I did take a lot of it off, and I actually sold a piece to one of them because I did one of those big like Chinese knots and red paracord. And I've never made any more of them outside of my key fob, but it gets weird when you're trying to like, I like that look, but how do I like do that where it's not?
I mean, incorporating it into your story would be one way to do it. But also, like I said, it's knowing it's mindfulness and being aware of what you're wearing, knowing where it's not just, again, just the monolithic Native American or whatever it is, knowing, especially at that time in America where not just Native American, you know, indigenous cultures, but indigenous Mexican cultures, different areas of any particular country is going to have their own, you know, clothing, their own religious beliefs, their own whatever it is. And so getting really specific, just like we would get really specific with our, you know, steampunk outfits or whatever you're cosplaying, getting very, very granular with the details of it. Okay, like for the SCA, I was a Viking, I was a 10th century Viking from Sweden, from Uppsala, Sweden, and I had trim. I had weaving, woven trim that was based on a very specific village in that place. So it's getting granular with your details instead of being real generic with it. Get detailed with it.
Okay. Right, have so a when story ask, for it. And you can like just like, I did my research. Yeah. I did.
Yeah. Well, you have a story that you are Jack. You are, you know, you are Jack Fireball Von Wolf. You have been all these places. You have done all of these things. I have this item because it's from this place that, you know,
that's exactly what you're
doing. This handkerchief is given to me personally by the Queen of America.
I mean, depending on the steampunk you're writing and the altered history you go with, depending on where you set your hinge moment there. Yeah, I mean, it could be.
See, this 1911 is 1,500 years old. It's gone through a couple of time rifts. I have it here. This bullet has your name on it because I knew you'd be right here again.
See, depending on the story you're writing. But yeah, create a story for the item that you have.
Also, Jack, I think you've got more slack for picking up East Asian trinkets because we didn't colonize them.
It's true.
And we didn't. True.
But that is one of the things that my character did for a while was raid railroad construction, and I was freeing people. And so that was one of the things that I did do for a rival. Okay, it was, I was great. I was a good guy, but I was getting paid by another railroad company to do it.
But there's a story there. It's not just
story behind.
I wear this because it looks cool.
Yeah, no, there's always a story behind everything on my
which
gear.
I mean is also valid, but you know, it helps if there's a, you know,
there's a story behind it. It was given to me by people, you know. But that's why I like the steampunk outfits the most with people who are, and it's funny because I hate it sometimes because I'll roll up and I'm like, that's a really cool piece. What's the story behind that? And they're like, I made it.
Like, which is how I usually am. I'm like, Etsy.
I wanted the dissertation behind why you made it, not the fact that you made it. It's fantastic. It looks lovely. Yeah. And so that gets a weird, it's kind of a weird place when apparently I like to role play a little more than a lot of people.
Well, no, but I mean, like I said, I used to do that in the SCA, and then I haven't really done that, but I also hadn't really gone to a lot of events like I do mm-hmm. now until I started this with y'all.
It also takes people like us three probably need to get together and just have a mind bash,
a light backstory, at least. Yeah.
Things. You know, coming up backstory, we're going off and doing things. We'll stick on the Patreon and people can see that.
Yeah.
And that's a fun thing we could do, or we have the further adventures of.
Apparently Blue Stocking has some
I have like a page she wrote maybe
up early on.
We can just start a doc and just start putting stuff in there. I mean, Google Docs, man, it's a great way to just
keep
fling ideas at each other
at the same time.
Yeah. And we already have a name. Well, Matt. Yeah. So the Patreon thing, it's the airship Hindenbrax, by the way.
Hindenbrax?
Yes, it's the airship Hindenbrax. He was like laying on his back and being fat. We're like, oh, what about Hindenbrax?
He can go up at any moment.
I mean, the squeezy treats make him a little gassy. So
squeezy treats?
Wait, are we still talking about Matt?
No, Brax, my cat.
Wait, he talks? What? I'm confused now.
God. Okay, so anyway, moving on. Yes, we should probably construct some kind of, you know, I mean, we got started with it with the intro. I mean,
heck, we've been doing this how long now together? It's like
just over 2 years. It was 2 years.
We've got stories now, and we should like do that.
A bit more.
Actually, 3 years.
It's approximately 3 years, depending, because you were also.
I met Jack face to face a year later at Steampunk November, a year after I started.
Yeah, and then you were on the show a couple of times prior as well.
Yes, as a fill-in, but you were not on it.
Yeah, which is why I was here. You were my filler. Yeah. Weirdly to think. I can't believe I've been doing it this long either. I still feel like a very new guy. I'm like, I can't believe I've been sitting
here. I know. I can't believe I started the dollhouse as long ago as I did and then just kind of wandered away. I don't know what I'm going to do with it.
Aztec speed steampunk. That's what we'll do with it. We'll create a calendar. It will end because we ran out of time to finish it, to make it like revolt, like to repeat itself. And everyone's going to think the world's going to end. That's our contribution to the steampunk world is an ending calendar because we got bored.
Got bored and wandered away.
It was like, and done. ADHD.
All right. Wow.
We've killed another hour, haven't we?
I think
that went fast. I really enjoyed this evening. That was fun.
Yeah, that was fun.
I talked a lot. I'm going to blame the 9%.
I was hoping this would be a good topic, and I think it worked out.
Yeah, I think so.
If you guys have questions of anything we didn't cover, please list it in the comments somewhere.
Other punks that you want us to talk about in the future? Because we haven't done. Wait, I'm trying to think.
We've done rocket punk.
Oh, we were going to talk about silk punk, like the Asian.
And I wanted to cover this first because you know it rolls that
leads into
the colonialism.
Does it not?
I mean, you're not wrong.
On our own soil.
Well, there's that, and there's also steampunk.
I've heard of that.
Neasy Shawl's Everfair, and the Harriet Tubman graphic novel series. Yeah.
All right, so you guys got homework. You got to go watch or got to read the Harriet Tubman series, the whole thing.
It's a graphic novel series.
Graphic novel.
I think there's like three, maybe.
Doable.
It's probably moderately.
It's beautiful.
Didn't know Harriet Tubman was a graphic artist.
Dude. I keep telling you, I'm going to come through this feed one day and I will find a way to do it. I'm going to reach through and snatch you balls.
Suddenly, there's just going to be arms just popping off screen.
Beth has achieved her final form.
We'll have to place ourselves like this. And you just,
and I just reach
like, your arms out like that. And then suddenly, there's hands just on either side just choking us out. That's going to look great.
Oh, John Naylor's asking, where does the name Dust Punk come from?
It's because the West.
You've never been to West Texas.
Yes. Have you ever been to Lubbock? We have these things called dust storms. It's nuts. It's the wind blows at like 55 miles an hour for like a good 3 days straight, and then it just stops. And it's like Mars. It's just raining.
It's kind of like that scene in The Mummy when all of this,
the wall of sand. Yeah, I actually have a picture of me living in Midland, Texas, when the wall of sand came across the airport. I'm just looking over my shoulder, and it's just getting closer. And it's like two streets. You can't see the streets anymore. You can't see the buildings. And suddenly you can't see me and the camera docks over. So, yeah.
It's funny you compare it to The Mummy, because that is the Saharan dust that has blown through Mexico and up into Texas.
Which is absolutely bananas.
Pacific.
It's the same damn
pollen from a different continent on it.
I know. I have new allergies that I didn't know I had.
From cactuses that are like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to produce this to mess up somebody else across the country, across the whole continents. Who's on the planet? A pollinated cactus on the other side of Canada.
All right.
Let me tell you about the people who are helping us to keep the lights on. Texas Steampunk Connection is supported by J.R. Seeger's A School for the Great Game. Edwardian teen Elizabeth Bancroft resents being sent to a finishing school in India, which is in fact the British Indian School for Spies, which teaches the family business of espionage, martial arts, Tibetan mystic arts. A School for the Great Game is the first in the Steampunk Raj series on Amazon. We're also supported by Fair Treasures. Fair Treasures has a selection of Texas-made female-presenting costumes and accessories for steampunks and renaissance wear and one-of-a-kind imported jewelry. You can shop Fair Treasures at fairtreasures.com, fair with an E, or on Etsy. So thank you, Kitty, at Fair Treasures. We also want to thank our patrons, being Jenny and Ryan Shaver, longtime contributors, our certified aeronaut, Natalie McTavish, our now newly recognized airship, Hinderbrax. Thank you, Blue Stocking, and Matt. And a generous grant from the crew of the airship Aberfeldy, Rita and Lawrence Allen. Thank you guys so much. Our opening music was Horses to Water by Topher Grace and Alex Elena. Our graphic design is Megan Higgins. Anything else I didn't mention? Probably.
Probably, but that's okay.
The hard work of your accountant.
Oh, yes.
The accountant. He needs to talk to you, by the way.
Okay.
Uh-oh.
No, it's a good thing. It's a good thing.
Well, then we're going to let everybody. Oh, I keep talking about the Galveston Steampunk Festival bonus episode that we recorded there. That has now already all been mixed and rendered, and it's ready to post. And I guess I tell you what, I'm going to post it on Patreon first.
Okay. Oh, that's a good idea. Yeah.
And then at the Tuesday next week, I will post it out to the public. Yeah. It's a pretty good show, especially if you want to laugh at us. Every time we try to say the Galveston Steampunk Festival, we screwed up.
That was me. Oh my God.
Did I?
It's like no. I'm sitting there trying to be like a narrator. I'm trying to do like the whole like what's her name from the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the reporter.
Oh, it's April.
April O'Neil, and I'm just utterly just like, welcome to Texas Galveston Punk Connection things. It's great. It's worth watching. I loved it. I watched it today.
It was good for our first try with that.
Dax did a wonderful time editing it. I loved it. And y'all find it a lot of fun.
All right. So I'm going to put the end sequence, and we will see you guys in 2 weeks. Thanks for tuning in.
Thank you for joining us. You can find us on Facebook by searching Texas Steampunk Connection, or on YouTube on the Steam Chest account.
Like and subscribe!
You can also send questions, comments, suggestions, and random animal pictures to our email, TexasSteampunkConnection@gmail.com.
Jack likes the raccoon ones.
If you're a podcast listener, we rebroadcast this show and can be found on most podcast apps, but we're hosted at podbean.com.
Unfortunately, and fortunately, we are no longer on the burning wreckage that was Twitter, but you can find us over on Blue Sky at TXSteamConnect.
If you'd like to help us keep Texas Steampunks connected, please join our Patreon and get our personal thanks on the show.
Our opening music was Horses to Water by Topher Moore and Alex Alina.
Our closing is the classic Steamboat Bill by Arthur Collins.
Our graphic designer is Megan Higgins, and our accountant is Frank Arthur and Associates. This has been Blue Stocking,
Jack,
and Fax, reporting from deep in the gearbox of Texas.
Once again, thank you very much for listening.
And until next time, mind your gauges.
Mind your gauges.